But what's interesting here is that the company that makes, there's only one brand that was legal. They forced retailers to ask for ID and created stiff penalties if they didn't. And so all Ottawa needed to do was just make a rule. We also see a lot of mission creep from organizations who are fighting the war on cancer, who then target products that don't cause cancer. And that's always made me scratch my head, where you have an organization like the Canadian Cancer Society.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Vaping Unplugged podcast. Everything you need to know about vaping and tobacco harm reduction.
Hello and welcome, David, to the World Vapers Alliance podcast, Vaping Unplugged. Thank you for joining us so much. And how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. I'm excited for us to record this podcast. But before we move to the policy side, maybe you could give us a quick intro about your role as a North American Affairs Manager in the Consumer Choice Center. What does your work consist of?
Yeah, so it involves both sides of the border here in North America, both Canada and the US. In terms of the work we do related to this topic, everything tobacco harm reduction. So ensuring that adult consumers, adult smokers have the alternatives available to them, the less risky alternatives available to them, to help them try and quit smoking. And unfortunately, in Canada, there are a number of hurdles and roadblocks that make that process more difficult. And so our work on this issue is primarily focused on ensuring that consumers do have access to those reduced risk products and helping them in terms of their journey to try and quit smoking and leave it behind.
Well, thank you so much for the amazing work you are doing for citizens in both countries. I'm a vapor myself, so I love hearing people's stories. So I'm going to ask you a little bit of a personal question. Do you use alternative nicotine products, vaping or nicotine pouches? And if so, what is your story?
So it's one of those funny things where I don't really have a story because I was never a smoker, but with a lot of people, everybody knows someone, right, who smoked and either couldn't quit or smoked and couldn't quit soon enough and paid the ultimate price for it. That's certainly applicable to me with family members who I never got to meet. Both my grandparents on my dad's side passed away from smoking-related illnesses long before I was even born. And so my kind of passion for the issue comes from trying to help people have access to these less risky alternatives as soon as possible, because it would make the world of a difference for so many people. And we found that out in all of our campaigns that we run in both Canada and the United States, when people share their stories with us about how long they were a smoker and how difficult it was to quit until they were able to have, let's say, flavored vapes or nicotine pouches or heat not burn or what have you. There's a long list of alternatives out there, and when people have access to them, hearing from them directly has been a very rewarding part of what we're doing in Canada, because it ultimately just means that they're able to speed up their journey away from smoking.
David, I'm so sorry to hear that your family had to experience smoking-related death. And now I understand why you would take this issue so close to heart. And again, yeah, Thank you for the work you do. So, how would you describe the current state of vaping or like alternative nicotine products in Canada right now? Like, what are the most significant challenges that the country is facing?
Yes, there's essentially, if I look at it, like three levels of reduced risk products. You have vaping So the federal government is currently in the process of enacting a flavor ban, which is a huge disservice to adult smokers, because the government will argue that they want to restrict flavors because they don't want youth being attracted to vaping. And I can certainly understand that. But they kind of throw adult consumers under the bus in the process, because for so many smokers, the flavor of vapes is fundamentally different than cigarettes. And that's part of the process of why it's easier to quit. And the research shows that they're far more likely to quit when they do have access to those flavors. So that's really important. We've also seen a province like Quebec have a flavor ban that has really not worked out. People, as with any prohibition, more often than not, the illegal market fills the void. And that runs the risk of obviously safety concerns, product quality, feeding criminal activity, all of those things. So that would be vaping. On nicotine pouches, the government has enacted essentially a flavor ban, restricting it to one flavor and remove them from being sold in convenience stores. This is another big problem, because it's almost as if Ottawa has forgotten that smoking is habitual, and by only having nicotine pouches sold at pharmacies, they've removed them from the place where people buy cigarettes, which is incredibly counterproductive, because you go in, you're someone who smoked for 10 years, you usually go into the same place to buy cigarettes, the convenience store, the gas station, etc. It is actually beneficial from a public health perspective to have those reduced risk products available where you sell cigarettes, so that maybe somebody can make the choice to, rather than buy cigarettes, buy something else, and something that's significantly less risky. In the case of nicotine pouches, it's about 99% less harmful. And so by removing them from the place where people buy cigarettes, it's a huge disservice, because it gives people an opportunity to try something that may help them quit. And then on heat not burn, which is kind of the third level, it's about 90% less harmful based on the research that's available to us right now. And this is mostly a tax policy issue, where the tax is set up so that you essentially have to buy 50 sticks at a time. And if you're trying to trying a new product, let's say, to get away from cigarettes, you don't want to have to force consumers to buy in bulk. It would be like forcing everybody to buy at Costco. We don't all need the kilogram jar of mayonnaise. It's nice to be able to buy smaller versions to try out different things. And so for heat not burn, it's mostly a tax issue, where the taxes are set up in a way that forces consumers essentially to buy in bulk, which limits the incentive for people to try it as a way to get away from cigarettes. And so I'd say on all three fronts, it's not great from a harm reduction perspective. But the thing that really makes Canada unique is that Ottawa and our federal government has really embraced harm reduction for everything else, except for helping smokers trying to quit. Whether that be needle exchange programs, safe supply, hydromorphone, safe injection sites, being loosely in favor of decriminalizing the penalties for possession, all of those things. And so there's a serious level of cognitive dissonance for policymakers, because they've embraced harm reduction on one side and not on the other. And as with all of these things, lives are at stake. You look at a country like Sweden that's embraced tobacco harm reduction. They're pretty much smoke-free from the WHO's own metric. That's a huge accomplishment. There is a playbook for us to follow if we just take the horse blinders off and have a look at what's worked in a country like Sweden. And yet, for some reason, Ottawa wants to embrace harm reduction on one side, but not on the other.
Exactly like you said, like Canada has always been an example of progressive regulations on harm reduction on everything else. And then I truly wonder, like, what's going on with vaping and nicotine pouches? Like, in your recent article that you published on Consumer Choice website, you criticized this new regulation of removing alternative nicotine products from the stores. It's an amazing article. We will link it in our description for our listeners. And there, you mentioned that age-gating nicotine products could have been a more effective approach to limiting youth access, which is looks like the main concern of the government, right? Hmm. So why do you think policymakers choose not to implement this common sense solution?
I don't really know. It's very hard for me to understand the logic from the folks in Ottawa, because right now any nicotine product under 4 milligrams is not age gated. So that includes Nicorette gums and sprays and whatnot. That's always struck me as kind of strange. And so their concern was that minors could technically buy nicotine pouches at a corner store and not be required to ask for ID. But what's interesting here is that the company that makes, there's only one brand that was legal. They forced retailers to ask for ID and created stiff penalties if they didn't. And so all Ottawa needed to do was just make a rule that said all nicotine products of any level have to be the same as, let's say, the age to buy cigarettes. That would have solved the problem. Instead, the health minister decided to give himself a new power, essentially, to override the approval process from Health Canada. And that is where we got these new rules from. And so I can't seem to understand why they would go that route when a very simple option of just age gating the whole category would have been much better.
So what I've heard when I was doing my research is that many Canadians still perceive vaping as equally harmful as smoking. So do you think that this might be like a populistic move for politicians to attack vaping that way?
It may be. There's certainly the same level of hysteria and moral panic that we saw in the United States. But at the same time, if you look at the United States, youth smoking is down and youth vaping is down, which kind of busts the moral panic about youth vaping, because what all of the doomsdayers said is that, well, minors will somehow get access to vapes and then they'll become smokers. That never happened. A lot of people like you and I spend a lot of time saying that, of course, that will never happen. There are very few people who go from vaping to smoking. And so it never happened. And you would think that Ottawa would have some sense to realize that that never came true. Unfortunately, it seems like there is still that moral panic. We also see a lot of mission creep from organizations who are fighting the war on cancer, who then target products that don't cause cancer. And that's always made me scratch my head, where you have an organization like the Canadian Cancer Society, who's long fought the tobacco industry and smoking and wanting to really bring down instances of lung cancer and secondhand smoke and all of those things that are really common, normal political conversations that we have. They've focused on nicotine pouches, which is really strange for me, because those products don't cause cancer. And so why is the Canadian Cancer Society, the Heart and Stroke Foundation, and all of the other organizations in that kind of grouping, why are they focused on these products that are ways or tools for smokers to quit? They should be part of the solution, not part of the problem. And so I think in Ottawa, we have several instances where these organizations carry a lot of weight. They lobby very aggressively. And I think that that's probably part of some of the reason why you see this strange and disjointed policy approach from Ottawa.
Exactly. And also, like, what to me, it seems like what you are describing is shows very well what could be a result of misinformation in the policy making.
Yes. So, yeah. Definitely terrible information, not only in terms of risks, but I mean, the gateway myth that we saw, that youth would start vaping and then start smoking, that never happened. There's just a lot of bad information that was out there for too long. And unfortunately, some of these public health organizations still parrot some of those bad, that misinformation. Whether or not it's on purpose, I don't know. But like, even if you look at the EVALI lung illness problem, where people will link that to legal vaping devices, which an ounce of analysis shows that it was all black market vapes at the time, predominantly not even nicotine, ironically. And so, yeah, there is still a lot of misinformation out there about what the risks are, what the differences between smoking and vaping or smoking and nicotine pouches in terms of risk are. And so part of our job is to continue to highlight where the government and some of these public health organizations have got it wrong.
So if you could debunk one myth about vaping and alternative nicotine products in populations' minds, what would that be? What is the most important one that people need to understand?
I think the most important one would be decoupling nicotine from smoking. Smoking causes cancer. Combustion causes cancer. Nicotine does not cause cancer. It is addictive, not recommended for people who don't already use nicotine products at all. Should be age-gated. That's totally reasonable. But there still is a lot of misconception that nicotine is the carcinogen that causes cancer when it's not. It's the addictive chemical, but it's not what causes cancer. And we see a lot of people still have that misconception. I think if we could get over that hurdle, we would have a much different view of vaping and nicotine pouches and other alternatives than we do now. And we probably have more reasonable regulations.
Exactly. Just like you mentioned Sweden, right? It's an amazing example of that myth debunked, because people use nicotine there by snus and nicotine pouches. And we see that the rates of smoking is dropping dramatically, but not just smoking, but also cancer rates, smoking related illnesses, everything is dropping in Sweden. It's going to be always a question why politicians choose to ignore that fact, this amazing example, which is Sweden. So, yep. And speaking of that, like, do you think that Canadian policymakers could learn from other countries' approaches and just like copy what other countries do?
I think they could, because, I mean, Sweden's smoking rate is half of Canada's. Lung cancer is the leading cancer killer in the country, in Canada. Tens of thousands of people die from it a year. Lung cancer isn't the leading cancer killer in Sweden. So you see the results in real time in a country like Sweden. And so there's no need to try and reinvent the wheel. We see where it works. We see the results of how it works. And these are all within the goals of the federal government anyway, which has been long striving to get to that percentage under 5%. We're still a long way to go, but there is one country who's managed to do it, and it happens to be Sweden. And there is a good playbook there for us to follow.
How do you think, is there any room for dialogue with policymakers to revisit these rules? Like you mentioned that the lobby from the other side is very strong. So do you think there is still room for dialogue for us or for advocacy groups?
Yeah, I think so. We're going to probably have an election in the next 5 or 6 months in Canada. It does not look at this point that the current government is going to remain in office. And I think that there's room for some positive development in this space with a new government who may be more interested in looking at the evidence and the available evidence from a country like Sweden and realizing what works. And so that may be an additional opportunity for people who care about this issue to make the positive change that we all want to see. So I think that is probably one positive outlook for the next year or so, let's say, when the government does change, re-engaging in that conversation and talking about these issues and talking about why it matters that smokers have access to things that are exponentially less harmful for them, and continuing that conversation.
Wonderful. Let's end the podcast with your recommendation. Like, since you have so much knowledge and experience of working on tobacco harm reduction in Canada, like, could you give us like two or three steps of what should advocacy groups in Canada do to save vaping or like to make regulations better? Like, is there anything that they can do on the ground? What is missing?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is highlighting personal stories, because I think more often than not, regulators, government officials forget that we're talking about real people. And I'll give you an example from our Leave Pouches Alone campaign. We had a gentleman named Kurt. He owns a very successful plumbing business in just outside of the Toronto area. He's gone from, I don't know, 15 or 16 cigarettes a day down to one or two. On the route to getting to zero, all because he will use nicotine pouches rather than cigarettes. And so he could potentially be smoke-free in the near future. And it's stories like that that highlight the success that people have. I think that's really the big takeaway, because we hear these stories about minors and youth, and those are all a problem, and we have to figure out viable solutions to stop minors from having access to products they shouldn't have access to. But at the same time, also remembering that there are adults who have been, in many instances, trying to quit for years. And so highlighting those voices and those stories, I think, is the most impactful way to continue the conversation.
Thank you so much, David. I could not agree more, because sometimes politicians might choose to ignore scientific studies, but it's very, very difficult to ignore personal stories and ignore a person that is telling you their own life story. So that's why in WVA we try to amplify the voices of vapers and bring these personal stories to the policymakers, because exactly we think that's the best approach when it comes to tobacco harm reduction. Well, thank you again, David, for this amazing conversation. I want to wish you very good luck with your planned activities in the future.
Thank you very much.